Welcome to Between Axles, your not-so-serious car podcast. My name is Peter, and I'm joined by three great people here today. My co-host, Luan, based in Auckland, and two of his close Alfa Romeo friends, based in Auckland as well. So this is Brand Talk Alfa Romeo. Thank you for joining us. So we'll start with some introductions. So we have Luan.
Hi, everyone. I'm here again. Yep.
And we also have two Marks today. So we're going to refer to the first Mark as Mark D and the second Mark as Mark B. So Mark D, could you introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. Look, I'm an alpha nut, very similar to Mark B. I'm just quite a lot younger and quite a lot taller. and no doubt we'll talk about our cars and our car history as time goes on. But yeah, sure. Born in Wellington, lived overseas for quite a long time, and now living in the city of Sales, Auckland.
Cool. Thank you so much, Mark D. Mark B, tell us about yourself.
So besides being the better looking and the taller, I've had a bunch of Italian cars of various shapes and sizes, or at the moment they're all Alfa Romeos. I was also born in Auckland. I've also spent a bit of time living overseas. In fact, I bought my first Alfa when I was living in Sweden. I also live in Auckland.
Okay, so obviously this is the brand talk of Alfa Romeo, and we normally do brand talks of going through the history of Alfa Romeo, but we also have two great guests here, so we want to actually hear more about your stories. So could we start with Mark D, and we want to hear more about your Alfa story and what you currently own in terms of Alfa Romeos, and also what got you into Alfa Romeo?
Big question. So my car history started when I was born and I was taken home. My father was a university student. My mother was a teacher. And the car they took me home from Wellington Hospital in was a Mini Cooper S. Even though I was a baby, I tell you what, I love Mini still, and I love Cooper S's. Yeah. And after that, my dad was into a little bit of motorsports, so did a little bit of rallying and stuff like that, lived overseas in a few different places. And then when we came back to New Zealand, one of his distant relatives, but also a university mate, came to visit. And he visited in a 1972 Alfa 1750 GTV, and it was a horrible colour. It was the mustard colour, which I absolutely used to hate. But I remember as a small child being put in the back seat of this car, no seatbelts, and being driven at high speed through the back roads of Taranaki. And I tell you what, just the feeling, just made me really excited. I couldn't believe it. It was the most exotic thing I'd ever seen. And I was in this back seat and we were going fast and I could feel the suspension and the tires, and it had five gears. I couldn't believe I was in the car with five gears, and each gear just sounded, you know, as we went through the gears, we just kept going faster and faster and faster. I think that is the point where I got hooked, and I just started reading about Alphas. Then later on, my dad bought an Alfa. When I finished university, he gave me that Alfa to restore. I restored it and then just basically started collecting on and off ever since. So that first Alfa is a 1971 1750 Berliner, and I've restored it once. And my plan now is to re-restore it again because, you know, life takes a few funny turns. Ended up getting busy with other stuff and ignoring the car. But at one point in time, I think it was in the 90s, the car was one of the display cars that for Ellerslie Intermarché Concours. It wasn't a Concours car by any means, but it was there. And then I happened to buy another 1750 Berliner as a parts car. But now with the values changing and the rarity, I'm hoping to get that on the road.
It sounds like you should get it back on the road for sure.
Yeah,
I have been telling him that.
How long has it taken you to get it up to this point?
Oh well, the first time I restored it, it took me probably 6 years to get it looking nice, and then unfortunately it sat outside for a little while and wasn't used for quite a while, and then Yeah, it's a pretty sad story, really. The other 1750 Berliner is complete, but I found that in a piggery, and it was like...
In a what?
Yes, that's right. Surrounded by pigs.
Pigs?
It was dry. There had been some rust, and it's like, well, I can't let this car... What's going to happen to this car?
The pigs will have it.
The pigs can't have it. It's just too good for a pig. Those 105 series Alphas, and Mark B, I'm sure, will agree, there is just absolutely nothing like them. And when my 1750 Berliner was going well, it just used to hum along, just everything about it, the feel, the excitement, the steering, the brakes, the suspension, and that really responsive engine was just, honestly. So then later on, when the Alpha 75 came out, my dad went to test drive one and very naughtily then said to me, hey, have a drive. This little kid drove this, you know, loan car from the Alpha dealers. And I thought, this is unbelievable. Like, quite different from a 105 series. So then my aim was to get a 75. I got a couple of 75, sold the first one because I ended up wanting a 3 litre. So now I've got a 3 litre 75. And then the last Alpha we bought actually is kind of a Top Gear special. The idea was we had a Alfa Romeo Owners Club annual general meeting in Nelson, which is in the South Island. And I don't know, how many Ks is it? 800 Ks one way, maybe 1,000?
Something like that, yep.
And I thought, well, actually, we need something a little bit more practical. And this 156 2-litre, 5-speed sports wagon came up. And so I went, maybe it looked a little bit rough. So I rang my mate Mark B. We met. We had a look at the car.
I had the slight advantage that I'd already owned a couple of them, so I knew where to look. But
Yes. And basically, we bought the car, did a little bit of... I think we bought it on the... No, we didn't buy it.
We bought it on the Sunday.
We took the car on the Sunday, but didn't actually buy it as an exchange money and do the deal till the Tuesday. And on the Wednesday, we drove the car towards the South Island, thinking it was going to break down within the first 100 Ks. And indeed, we made it not only to the South Island, but around the South Island and all the way back without you know, having any problems. You know, we were expecting to have lots of incidents and lots of, this is broken, we're going to fix this. But unfortunately, it was just, you know, really...
It was just too reliable.
It was too boring. You bought the wrong car. Too reliable.
I mean, Alphas are super reliable. I think that's one of the great misnomers about Alphas. But anyway, so that's my history, and those are the Alphas we've currently got.
How about you, Mark B?
Yeah, well, mine's a bit of a different history because I actually don't quite know how I got into cars, apart from the fact I obviously had some interest in engineering from a young age because my parents were really not into cars. They, you know, they drove a car and that was it. So, you know, I grew up, my father had a Kingswood wagon, then a Mark IV Cortina wagon, then a Mark V Cortina wagon, then a Sierra wagon, and you see the pattern. And I learned to drive in my mother's Austin 1300, which is the most horrid thing ever. It was a 1300, not 1100. It was only a redeeming feature.
Your dad got a Cortina and she got the Austin.
yeah. Oh, it was and that was a hand-me-down for my grandmother, I think. I did, you know, I was always interested in cars somehow. And my first car and my only car I've owned that's not Italian was a Ford Anglia, which I bought when I was 16. 997 cc's and 39 horsepower and four-wheel drum brakes. And the virtue was it was a really simple car to work on.
I had to Google what the Anglia was.
Yeah, as the predecessor to the Ford Escort, actually, they're now worth money. Just as like
my really? One.
Oh, they are, yeah. And people did use them as race cars for, you know, chuck a 1500 Cortina. Anyway, that's enough talking about English cars. I'll just stop there.
Yeah, exactly.
So somehow I learned the year of my ways and then actually started buying Fiat. So I had did my first summer of work as a uni student and had some money in my pocket. So I spent it all on a car, as you do. Back in the days when there weren't student fees, it was great. And bought a Fiat 125. Now, I don't know if you know what that is.
Great car.
So they're a square box. In fact, it was known amongst my friends as the Flying Brick. When I was living in Sweden, I was over there working there for a while, and I went to buy a car. And I thought, you know, I'm in Sweden, I'm good. I'll buy a Saab. You know, it's by the local. And then I started hearing enough horror stories about Saab gearboxes exploding, Saab 900s, and a friend of mine had one and I drove it and wasn't so inspired. But then I thought, I'll buy a BMW, so I started looking at 5 Series. And then an Alpha popped up, an Alfetta, which is 1984, again, four-door sedan. I had a really young baby at the time, and so a good practical car to travel the country. It was cheap, and I liked Italian cars, and I bought it, and it was great. Now, and it is an Alfetta, is a generation that had the gearbox at the back and the engine at the front and a drive shaft in between that sometimes had donuts in it. So I had that. That was great. Drove it for a year. It's the only car I've ever made money on, only because the exchange rate changed. So I bought it for a certain amount. You know, it was like the equivalent of $2,500 or something like that. Drove it for a year, sold it for what I bought it for, and the exchange rate changed. So I almost made enough money to pay for the parking tickets. And I came back from overseas, bought a car that I still have, which is my 1973-2000 GDV. So this is the Bertone Coupe, the best Alpha ever. If you go and look at the base, if you want to buy your £300,000 resto mod from Alphaholics, it'll be one of those. Only mine isn't. Thankfully, that was back when they were cheap, and that was my daily driver for about 10 years. I used to take my kids to daycare in the back of it, and I had a 156 twin spark sedan for quite a while until I passed it on to my kids, and then had some German car drove in the back of that. I had 159 Sportwagen, as Mark mentioned, and that's my kind of daily, if you like, or actually weekly, since I don't drive to work.
So I can see a bit of a pattern here, you know. So once you get into these Italian cars, or once you get into these Alphas, it kind of seems to run in the family a little bit, right? And then you kind of accumulate and start collecting more and more of them.
That's exactly what Alpha stands for. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Always looking for another.
Yeah.
Always looking for another. Trade me every morning, every night. Always looking for another.
Everyone's like a hawk on Trade Me.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
My pattern that I found is that, first of all, you managed to get your wife on board, which is not so easy. And the second one is that you never had, or not that I heard, any major issues with any of your Alfa Romeos.
Not completely true. Actually, Fibellina, the 105 series, very strong cars, very strong engine, very reliable. Couple of little problems like the synchrone second. Hey, all cars of that era kind of have those problems. But the most interesting problem I had was with Alpha 75, 1987 Alpha 75 2.5-litre V6. When I got that car, I had a few female friends. The car was fine. And then finally I met, you know, my wife, Rachel, and things were getting serious. From the first time she hopped in that car, it would not start. And so I'd go through all the normal things that you would check, and it would all check out fine. And then sometimes on the third or fourth go, it would fire. Like, it always turned over. If she hopped out of the car, it would start. If she hopped into the car, it would not start.
The girls don't like each other.
This was not over a day. This was not over a week. This was over a period of time. Now, you know, it was a great car, but I almost had to choose between this girlfriend and this car, and that's why I got rid of it. And also, I really wanted a 3-liter.
that's the real reason.
They say cars have souls. I mean, Alphas have souls. It was too scary. It ended up being a bit weird.
In terms of reliability, apart from that first Anglia, I've driven Italian cars for actually 35 plus years. Yes. The first time I've had to call a tow truck was last year. And that was just a stupid bit of diesel emissions EGR valve that decided it was going to jam itself up completely. So, you know, that's probably not too bad.
That's a pretty good track record.
I think it is a bit of a misconception because, you know, like Italian cars, like Alphas, they're basically just cars. They're just slightly different to other cars. And sometimes, you know, in New Zealand, it is a little bit difficult to find parts and to fix them. But if you just do a bit of research online, you know, you go on forums, there's a lot of really helpful people out there. You know, there's a lot of people in the club that will help you out fixing issues and stuff. It's actually not as hard as people think it is, to be honest.
I think Alpha is a little bit different, though. I know, I think there's two things. One is that it has a lot of first-generation technology. Alphas have had twin-cam engines, you know, since 1910. You know, two twin-choke carburetors or more, you know, complicated things. disc brakes, all round. These are complicated things. And when you're in, you know, when it's 1968 and you turn up with a car with all those things and the guy, you know, mamma mia, this is crazy.
That's true. That's true. I've actually learned a lot about Alpha's history recently. And there's some really cool things that Alpha did really early on, like variable valve timing. Alpha was apparently the first production engine to have variable valve timing.
My Alfetta, my 1984 Alfetta had VVT.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll hear all about Honda and blah blah blah. But yeah, so
and there's a bit of bias with that too. And so when, you know, mates or people talk about, you know, Giuseppe, which was 156 twin spark, I say, yeah, you know what? It's got a 2 liter twin cam engine and it's kind of like a VTEC engine. Oh, it's a VTEC engine like a Honda? And I go, yeah, kind of. Because they don't understand the history, they don't know what Alpha's done. The brand doesn't have that credibility. Now, if it was BMW, 1970, when did they introduce the ultimate driving machine? 76, 78, something like that. You know, their cars were absolutely, you know, old-fashioned, single Solex carburetor, single cam, pathetic power, and they sold that ultimate driving machine concept. Well, actually, Alpha were producing the ultimate driving machine, but not selling them, not marketing them
properly.
And had been doing so for 10 years before that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
So pretty much Alfa Romeo had great engineers, but terrible marketing department.
pretty much, yes, yeah. I think so. I agree with that, yes. They were always going to be a bit of a boutique brand. I don't think their ambition is to be like a mass production sort of, you know, like a Toyota sort of brand. But they've always been pushing the envelope and always trying to get new technology and new innovations into their cars as well, which you can still feel, like, even up to the cars that have just recently come out from Alpha. So I think you can feel some of that DNA coming through.
Yeah, they're owned by FCA, so I guess that's more of a niche, more performance, more a little bit more, they're not high-volume movers. My history with Alfa Romeo, obviously, I haven't owned one before, but I worked in the marketing team for FCA or Ateco in New Zealand. And I've dealt with the few newer ones, so I have no idea about the older ones. But I do remember Top Gear did an episode years ago with that Alpha 75 3 liter. That's true, right? Jeremy Clarkson did have the 3 liter 75, the black one.
But you know, the reliability thing, just getting back to that, and the newer Alphas, and you probably know that, you know, there's been some quite big tests. There's JD Power. Which do their thing. And, you know, when the Giulia quad came out, their results were really good. And which car magazine, I've used these kind of things twice, and I think I might have put it in an Alpha News article. I think in 2017, Alpha came second out of all brands.
They are getting a lot better. And I think part of the reason is because they've consolidated a lot of their models, you know, like the Giulia and the Stelvio share a platform and probably share a lot of parts as well. And then pretty much the only other car they have at the moment is the Giulietta, which is an older platform. But I think that's quite a nice segue into, you know, modern Alphas and what modern Alphas are like. I haven't actually driven a Giulia or a Stelvio. Have either of you had some experiences with that?
Yeah, we've been one of the perks of the being a kind of the local rep for the club has means that we have had the opportunity to drive both Giulia Quadrifoglio and Veloce and also Stelvio, and they're awesome. They really are. And even the Giulia Veloce, it's still a seriously quick car. It's a lovely thing to drive.
That's an under 5 second car, right?
It's 280 horsepower, you know, so it's
on an eight speed pedal shift auto that just changes so quickly you wouldn't know it.
Do you think they've kind of kept that Alpha sort of soul or Alpha-ness about them still?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's been so much of it's been about style. We talked about the exterior, but the interior of an Alpha is just a really nice place to be as well.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of, apart from the strange 75s with weird handbrakes and things,
you're not driving that car. 75 you don't drive, you fly. It's like 747. You've got to, you know, the handbrake here, the switches on the roof, same with an Alpha 90. But you know, I think that Alpha DNA comes very clearly through all those cars. You know, when the Giulietta Quadrifoglio, the 1.75 4C engine car came out. I happened to be in Italy with Alfa at the time. and I got one of those. And I got to say, it's the same thing. It's that DNA. It's that
they're just fun to drive. Even the really basic ones, they feel like...
There's a lot of people that love their Mitos. You know, Mitos. I didn't really think much of them for a long time, but heaps of people really love them. So they're obviously doing something right.
I think the other thing, the nice thing about, I know from an ownership perspective about Alphas four is actually the price range is so wide. So you can buy an Alpha for very close to nothing, or you can go and pay $500,000 for something quite exotic.
Yeah. I was just looking at the sales data in New Zealand for how many Alphas are moved this year. So like November was 6 Alphas in the whole country.
Yeah, it's like, pretty dire. Yep.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Do you think it's because Alpha is not present or very limited presence in big markets like the US and China would be detrimental in the long term as well?
Well, apparently Alpha Julius was selling quite well in China very recently. But, you know, I was in Hawaii at the end of last year? Anyway, I went to the Alpha dealer. They had no Alphas on display. I tried to speak to them about Alphas. You know, this is supposed to be the whole resurgence of Alpha in North America. You know, Alpha dealers and Alpha after-sale service have, you know, historically let the brand down, especially in the States,
and in the UK. In the UK. And that's the trouble. And that's where we get a lot of the media comes from. So,
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of moto journalists in the UK. I feel like Alpha's almost trying a little bit too hard sometimes. You know, maybe they just need to focus back into their core market, you know, because I think a lot of the time they forget about how to do things. Like, for example, the 4C, you know, why couldn't they make a Quadrifoglio version of the 4C or a GTA version of the 4C? You know, it's those sort of things that it's like, it's almost there, you know, it's almost a brilliant thing. It's almost a giant killer, if you like, but they're just not quite there. And it's the same with the new GTA. Yes. You know, and everyone was expecting 600 horsepower because that's what they were promising with the GTB, but then it kind of came out with, what is it, 530 or something? So it's almost there, you know. If they just spent a little bit more effort, I just feel like it could be so much better, you know.
But I think that's also one of the problems of being a small brand within a larger conglomerate is it's not like once upon a time when Alpha was a company, it had a full range and it had to have a full range. Mm. And then as it kind of got sucked up into the Fiat empire and the various iterations that's gone through, at least it's in a better state than Lancia is,
that's not quite true. It's not quite, because Lancia is selling more cars, you know,
Alpha
in the European market,
that's because Alpha doesn't have a small car anymore, you know.
Exactly.
But like I said, that almost adds to the attraction of having Alphas, because they are a little bit more, you know, rarer and a little bit more exotic. And it's kind of, I think it's actually kind of a good thing. It's not necessarily a good thing when you buy the car brand new, but when you buy like a 147 GTA secondhand, there's so many things that you can do to improve it. You know, for example, they didn't bother putting a LSD in the 147 GTA. Yeah,
absolutely crazy.
But then aftermarket, people do it. You know, pretty much every single GTA has an LSD now, and it just totally transforms the car. You know, so it's kind of they're almost, you know, like a flawed product or a flawed design, and then you kind of have to rely on yourself to make them a bit more perfect. You know, and I guess that's kind of the attraction to it as well.
Anyway, these 4Cs that are coming out, basically they've painted the wheels, they've put a plaque on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
and that is it. Now, if you look at the Novitec stuff, or you look at all the other people, including a bunch of people in Australia and New Zealand, and the simple things they've done to their 4Cs to make them awesome, and yes, it might cost another $5,000, but you get another $50,000 worth of value. It's just, I need to correct myself. They did do one thing, and that was change the exhaust. So it's now got a center exit exhaust instead of the two side, one on each side. But no change to power, no change to this. I mean, it's just a little bit crazy.
It is a little bit crazy.
The Alpha enthusiasts, the Alpha engineers, I'm assuming that is not where they would want to be, because they've already made the 4C GTA, and a whole lot of hot cars. It's the corporate part of Fiat Chrysler that goes, no, we will make more money if we paint the wheels and put a sticker on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's madness. Same thing with the GTA. Now, the GTA, Giulia Quadrifoglio GTA, had come out with 600 horsepower, 700 horsepower, 800 horsepower. Hey, there's a 488 motor fit in a Giulia. Answer? Well, yes, it could do. And so, and you just, you know, those M3s, those M5s, those, you know, C63s, you just want to pummel them.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's what you want to do.
Want to pummel. And that's what happened when the Giulia first came out, you know, the Nuremberg times, you know, the numbers, you know, it was kind of like, it wasn't a knockout, but man, it rocked that whole, you know, super saloon kind of segment. But they needed to follow that up with the knockout, which would have been the GTA.
Do you think that FCA really wanted to preserve Maserati over Alfa Romeo as the better child?
Well, that's again another completely corporate thing because,
yeah,
you know, Alfa, a Stelvio's, now, Stelvio Quad in New Zealand's 144K. You know, what if Fiat Chrysler make it of that, say, 40K?
Which is a Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk. It's about 160,000, 170,000.
Yeah. Whereas you can, you know, sell a Levante for, you know, $220,000 and they make 80K.
Simple. Yeah. I do feel like they've spent a lot more effort on marketing Maserati in the emerging markets, you know, especially in Asia. That's what I've noticed anyway.
And again, just as Mark said, yeah, it's a higher margin car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I guess maybe Alfa just kind of sits in a bit of an awkward spot. You know, it's not quite like a luxury car, and it's not quite a cheap car when you buy it brand new. So perhaps it's just in a bit of a weird spot at the moment. I think we should probably move on and talk about sort of the racing, right? Because Alfa's back in Formula One as well, as of recently, as of the last couple of years.
Yes, well, the Sauber team. But that's another example. And this doesn't seem like a enthusiast or engineering kind of decision. This is a corporate marketing decision.
It's more of a branding decision, right?
It's a branding decision. And I think they had other options. And, you know, I love the history of the Alfas in the 30s, where Bugatti was really kind of, you know, that Italian-French kind of dominant car, and there was Alfas, and they were kind of fighting. And then, you know, Alfa released this car, the 2900, which kind of blew everything in the dust. Now, imagine if Alfa had produced a car that was 20% faster than a Veyron. You know, that's what happened in the 30s. That, you know, that's what happened in the 60s. Fastest car in the 60s, it's not a Miura, it's an Alfa, you know?
Yeah.
And people, you know? Yeah. And so imagine if they, instead of spending all that money on Formula One, which would have cost a shitload.
It's an expensive game.
You know?
Yes.
And they're in bed with Ferrari, you know, you can do some stuff. Imagine a, you know, V24, two V12, you know, Ferrari engines with Alfa rocker covers and you know, the bi-motor concept, which came out by Alfa in 36, you know, use that concept, call it the same thing, 2,000, 2,500 horsepower, just blow everybody up. That's what I would love to see. That's what I dream about at night time. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you are dreaming, Mark.
Yeah, that sounds like a bit of a dream.
It's not a market they're in, and this comes back to the kind of corporatization of car brands.
Fine.
Time will tell. Time will eventually to see what comes out of it, what that means for.
I certainly hope that one day I see a lot more Alphas, you know, in racing categories and winning races. I think, you know, it'd be amazing for the brand and it'd be really good for the motor industry as a whole, to be honest, because Alfa's one of the oldest car brands that's still around, you know, still making cars.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that last comment is leading into how Alfa can actually fix itself and become a future-proof brand is appeal to the younger generation. So when you talk to a teen or someone in their 20s, very little would aspire or imagine to be driving Alfa Romeo. And that's my take when I first came into and decided to do this Alfa brand talk, because I always had like a massive bias towards Alfa Romeo, and that's only because of what I heard in popular media, mainstream media. And obviously it's totally unfair because I've never driven an Alfa Romeo, but a lot of people that I know of that kind of age group have that bias because they never experienced it like you guys have. And I think Alfa Romeo really needs to appeal, whether it's through racing or having a very good hero product, to reach to the next generation.
Totally agree.
I think having a really cool, cheap car that's, you know, sort of fun, that would definitely go a long way towards that.
Yeah, like a car that, you know, popular media would pick and, you know, great reviews, looks great, and is potentially obtainable. It's not in the six figures.
And that's the trick. It's got to be attainable. Whereas the Giulia, which is a great car, is, you know, it's not unattainable, but it's, you certainly, you've got to be relatively wealthy.
Absolutely.
Same problem with the 4C. You know, you can't just go out of uni and think about buying one.
I mean, it is what is quite cool at the moment is we see within the club itself, we seem to be getting a good kind of intake of, you know, kind of young enthusiasts joining up, which is great to see. So that's kind of reassuring, good. At least. Every month we have an event of some sort, and once or twice a year that might be that might be at Smales Farm. But we have a bunch of other. We have a club night and we have a club event every month of the year. So there's always something on, and that ranges from a garage crawl to a sort of finding some good driving road somewhere that we can drive down and then by lunch drive back again, through to track days or whatever else. So
how can we find more information about the Alfa Club? Website, Facebook?
Website, Facebook, yep. Alfa Romeo Owners Club of New Zealand, AROC.
And those numbers Mark was talking about was just one region. So you basically got to times that by 8. So every region has a monthly meeting, you know, and generally most regions have an activity. So, you know, top half of the North Island, we've got Auckland Club, you know, which is Mark and I, and then we've got Bay of Plenty, we've got Waikato. And as you go down the country, there are different clubs. Same thing in Australia, you know, they're state-based clubs, and they are very active and they produce some really nice magazines, that's the other thing. When you buy into the brand, you actually buy into a whole lot more. You know, you buy into that Italian culture,
the community,
that community, the exuberance, that expression, that want. You know, there's a will. That people in the club generally want to have a good quality of life. They enjoy life. They like eating well, drinking well, socializing well, driving well. And that's kind of what we're attracted to too, you know.
Cool.
And as a club, that's a good thing too. You've got some people who are into, you know, buying exotics and restoring them, or buying less exotics and restoring them. And through to people who have bought a brand new Quadrifoglio and just want to go and drive it and meet people. So, you know, the club is very accepting of different of, you know, doesn't matter whether you're quite what you bring or
When's your next event? Where and when?
That's a different event. Our next event is on the 19th of January, which is the club night in Auckland.
Where is it held?
People just need to email.
It varies,
Email us. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
And most of these events, they can find both of you, both Marks?
Oh, most generally. Mostly. Yeah.
Okay.
We try and confuse people as much as possible.
there's too many Marks, too many Tonys, too many Keiths in the club.
Yeah. Too many Luans, right?
Yeah.
One's enough.
I think one's probably more than enough.
So, just wrapping up the Alfa Romeo chat here. Is there any last comments or advice you would give someone who is looking into getting into Alfa Romeos in any capacity?
I think Jeremy kind of takes it there. You're not really truly a petrol head until you've until you've driven an Alfa Romeo, it's actually different. You need to own it. You know, this is like Mark or somebody else said, this is a relationship. You know, you just, if you want to have a you know, a blind date or a one night stand, that's fine. But if you want a long-term relationship, you need to put the time and effort into this, and you'll be rewarded by enjoying a car and a car with a culture that is kind of unparalleled.
Agreed. Yep.
Actually, the club is a really good way to find a car. So don't feel you have to buy an Alfa before you join the club. There are a whole lot of cars that change hands within the club and are never advertised. But not only that, the opportunity just to ask people, even when you're looking at a car, there's a reasonable chance somebody will know of that car and go,
That's good to know. So if you are looking or aspiring to own an Alfa Romeo, please join a club, wherever region you might be in New Zealand, Australia.
Well, it's a national club, and the activities are done organized regionally.
Thank you so much to both of our Marks for joining this Alfa Romeo brand talk tonight. A lot of things we could have talked more of. We just don't have the time to go through everything. And thank you so much for our fellow co-host, Luan, as well.
No problem. All good.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been fun.
Not a problem. It has been fun.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Mark. Thanks,
Luan. All right. Ciao, ciao. Bye.